Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 445 of the JV Club with my phenomenal guest, Fielding Edlow. What a delight. Listen, I have a very newsy intro, so I want you to please enjoy this episode. I also want to just quickly tell you that my friends, the Double Clicks, wrote a musical about the things that matter to them: LGBTQIA, identity, cheese, robots, change, trying to be a person. And you can pre-order the musical and help them spread that wonderful message. So you can go to teachingarobottolove.com. That's teachingarobottolove.com. Or you can look at the Double Clicks on social media, at the Double Clicks. I also want to let you know that this episode has something very special at the end of it, which is a song inspired by the experience and conversation I had on the podcast Pod Songs. And the band Francis Luke Accord wrote a song based on that conversation. It is a beautiful song. Some of you may have seen, I tweeted about it. Please hang in there. Stay tuned after the outro music for the whole song by these guys. It's so beautiful, and I'm so touched and delighted to have been a part of that process. So enjoy that. I will talk to you soon. I got to check out a little bit of Bitter Homes and Gardens. I love a pun in a title, first of all. Let's get that out of the way right now.
Thank you.
And I do
can't take credit for it.
You can or you can't?
Cannot. Yeah. Our director gave us the title when we were like, maybe we should call it, I don't know, long-term creative gaslighting. They're like, no, that's not really a hook. That's going to be a real turnoff.
Who's your director?
But thank you. Our director is Dave Rock, who's primarily an editor, but nice. Wanted to get into directing. But he directed.
I'll tell you what. I'm shocked that more editor. I mean, every editor turned director that I've ever worked with has been so great because they are already thinking like an editor, and I just feel like that is such a huge.
That's exactly
skill.
It. Like, even though he has probably the zero of sort of the acting background, which I do generally appreciate.
Yeah, agreed, yeah.
It is such a remarkable quality that he always, like, that perspicacious editing eye, like, yeah, he's already thinking 10 steps ahead is remarkable.
But also, and I agree with you, but I would say, and tell me what you think about this, is that he has spent more time with actors
than
the rest of the cast and the directors combined. So in a way, and he is seeing rough footage. So in a way, like, that, because I don't know, you know, for me, like, going to a rap party or going to any sort of get together that is off location where something has been finished in some way, always love when the editor, who I don't recognize for obvious reasons, because they're just not on set, come up to me and say, like, I have spent months looking at your rubber face. Like, I love that so much. And
I know,
you know what I mean?
It's so weirdly intimate.
It's so intimate.
Like, and you still want to be in my... It's such a surreal thing. Because also, his wife is one of my oldest friends. So I'm like, listen, if you don't want to go to dinner with us, we get it. You have spent so much time looking at my husband's big, moony, white Irish mug and my little acerbic, like, look at me, look at me, look at me. But yeah, I find it vulnerable.
Yeah.
Is someone looking at you that much and spending that much time with you?
I absolutely. I just am so in awe of editors for the patience and the detail and the fact that they are fully make and break when it comes to comedy, that I never have any exposure to them otherwise. And so, but you know, you're totally right. Like, I feel the next thing I feel like doing is apologizing. Like, when that happens, the very next thing you do is say, like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so very sorry.
It is excruciating for me not to apologize because I'm trying not to be like, I'm so sorry. I'm alive. I'm so sorry. That joke didn't work. You know, but yeah, it's true. It's a skill set that I absolutely don't have, will never have. So yes, I'm awed by that skill set. It's so painstaking.
It's so painstaking. I mean, I really like anything, anytime I've sat in editing for something of mine or, you know, whatever, like I have those, it's like the waves. It's almost like, I would almost say like the Simpsons slash BoJack slash like the sort of the joke that starts semi funny and then it a lot of empty space is left for you to experience it, and then it gets unfunny and then funny again and then funny again, unfunny, unfunny.
So
like
true.
When you leave that space, that is sort of what I feel like in the edit. Like I'll be like on a high where I'm like, oof, I love getting into this and being like, oh, wait, there was a split second. I think we could shave off and it's really going to kick up the comedy.
Right.
And I get really into it in that very like ADD slash OCD way where, and I mean all due respect to both of those things and people who have them, because I am being very serious when I use those terms. But like where for reals, like you sort of go into a manic space where it's like, I think maybe I want to do this. And then two hours later, I'm like, I can't ever look at this again. I can't look at this. I can't look at you. I can't, I can't sit. I can't sit in a chair. I may never be able to sit in a chair again. Like,
ever.
It's just
I
so.
I can't sit again. I can't even be inside my own skin.
Exactly.
It's like, it's true. It's this weird borrowed time. And you do. It's so true to your point. You kind of lose objectivity. You're like, shave it off. Just shave a second. And I'm going to take over Hollywood. This is it. And they're like, no, actually, you're wrong. And we should use the other take. It was a big lesson trusting my own instincts. See, my thing also is I get very triggered by like super duper control freaks and crazy. And I think we all have our, you know, we're on this spectrum of just control stuff. Fine.
Yes.
So I sometimes err on the other side of like, I'm cool. I'm so cool. You decide. Yeah. Like, I'm just, you know, I'm and that's been to my detriment a little bit too. So when I was in the editing bay, it was nice to be able to be like, what about that take? Can we look at that? You know?
Yeah.
I didn't do that for season one at all.
And did you, and so part of that coming in this season was a direct result of kind of going, you know what? I could have done that more. Like, I wish that I would have done that more. I think I should have been, I would have liked to have been more a part of that process.
Yeah. In all ways of just speaking up a little bit more on set or just, and again, because there's a graceful, direct, kind way to do it. And I'm not a bitch, but like, it's okay. You know, yeah, I definitely learned from some of them. And like, I think even someone said to me, well, you never cared about that before. I was like, would you say that to a man? Would you say that to a man?
Yeah,
anyway,
I know.
To go
no,
there,
no.
You know?
I mean, listen, I know what you, I totally know what you mean. And I also, my first instinct is to be like, I don't want to go there, probably for all the same reasons of all the things we've already been talking about that we connect on. I experienced the same thing, and it is, I mean, it does, because I do have these conversations with my partner, with Brandon, and, you know, it's not that he's like, you know, when we talk about stuff like this with respect to being women or with respect to being women raised in the environment in which we were raised and knowing that we've already had it so much better than our mothers and their mothers in terms of like expectations placed on women and stuff in American culture specifically. But it's not that it's an attack against or making a blanket statement that men can't also have this. It's not that. It truly isn't. Like, I'm not trying to be... you know, exclusive about brokenness in any sort of way, you know, but I do feel like that. I just, you know, I hear you saying this stuff and it rings so true for me as well. And it's really a weird combination. I feel like, I mean, I will say male and female. I feel like people who listen to my podcast tend to lean on this side anyway of being very nice, good people, but also very smart people who have opinions. And that's a very hard combination. Being a people pleaser and really wanting people to feel valued or not wanting to insult anyone, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yet also having a strong opinion and having a sense of wanting to be in control or having a sense of like being a producer in some way, whatever that means, you know, in whatever capacity you're thinking that way. That's really hard because it is a situation where half the time, like, I just want it to be easy for everyone. And if it being easy for everyone means that I have to pretend like I don't care about something, then I might do that. And then when I finally can't do that anymore and I allow myself the room to be more assertive and everyone's kind of still fine with it, But also somebody might say like, oh, you never, I actually never seemed to even care about that before. Like, that's just a very familiar place to me.
It is. And I can sort of turn, I had someone say, just turn sideways and just brush their energy off of you in the moment.
Yeah.
And, and I was like, okay, I look like psychotic. But yeah, it's so true about being discerning 100% of just being discerning. Like, do I need to say something? Do I need to say something right now? And does it need to be said by me?
Right,
like this mantra.
And if I don't say anything now, am I potentially creating a situation in which I will say more later that I will regret?
Exactly, I was gonna say. Like, yeah. I sometimes it's self-preservation or trying to preempt the resentment
because
I'm so tired of the draining, enervating resentments.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to lie in bed anymore and putting people's names under the rug. I'm like a diabolical little like fire starter Jew. But like, you know, I'm done. Like, I just want to speak up in the moment if possible, or maybe 10 minutes later. And then, yeah. I mean, I think generally, you know, we really actually, though, everyone took care of each other on the set. Like, I had this moment where I had this like little monologue eviscerating my husband, or calling him like a portly, I don't know, what was I calling him? Rebel Wilson with a dick? I don't remember, but something like insane. And I have, and then the actor, one of our guest stars who had, you know, he's worked a ton, and, you know, I was like intimidated to have him. And I remember he's like, you got to do that again. There was sound interference. Like, he just like took care of me.
Yeah.
And like, I barely knew him. It wasn't the sound guy. It wasn't the director. It was like the actor. And it was just like moments like that, that I was like, okay, that it just makes it all kind of worth it.
Oh God. Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a little bit of crossover, even just in your show with people like that I love working with and have worked with a bunch, like Eric Edelstein and John Michael Higgins, just two of my favorite all time people to work on.
Amazing people. We don't know John Michael Higgins at all. He was a friend of directors, but yeah, Larry, my husband, had worked in a Fusco brother. With Eric Edelstein in Twin Peaks. And yeah, we're doing an Instagram live with Eric tomorrow. He's always just so game. He's like, friends, I just want to hang out with you guys.
Oh my God.
He just always calls me friend, and I just want to leap into his arms and be like, is it going to be okay?
Yes, it's all. And if I feel it's all real. Please give him my very best.
I will.
And,
I definitely will.
And
yeah,
I totally agree.
Person.
And I think, all right. I'm going to rewind a little bit because I could talk to you about, it's become clear instantly that we could just talk about anything. Like, I could pick some topics out of a hat and we'd be fine. But, but you know, listen, I can't just let you being a quote diabolical Jew just lie on the ground. I think that will be a fun way to put that expression into context. Where
Perfect.
Did you grow up? Where were you in particular? Like, where were you spending kind of your high school years?
I grew up in New York City, in the city, and I romped around being the Tasmanian devil, diabolical little Jew. Leave no stone unturned. I went to high school on the Upper West Side, but I grew up Upper East. And that was my childhood.
I mean, I'll say it's a minimum. I mean, the number of people I've had on the podcast who have been from New Jersey or like Long Island or that it dwarfs the amount of tried and true New York Cityites.
Oh, really?
I've had on the podcast.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, there are some liars out there. They're like, oh, I grew up in New York. And then I'll press, and I always press them because I feel like it's the only thing I have. I grew up in New York City. Like, it's literally the only cool thing about it. And they're like, oh, yeah, actually, well, fine. I grew up in Roslyn, like T-neck, like Wayne, Indiana. And you're like, I did the time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. No, I'm serious. Like, you're right.
Thank
and
you.
I feel like
Thank
I can
you.
Think of, I think you might be my third, and I've done like 400 and almost 450 episodes. I mean, I think like off the top of my head, I feel like Zandi, Hardig, and...
Zandi and I went, she's older, but we went to, not to like throw her under the bus. Yeah. She went to Spence. So we were at Spence.
Yeah. I thought Spence maybe.
And,
Well there. Yeah. So see, I know what I'm talking about, but like, if I can name them on one, I mean, if I could name them that many episodes and I can go, I think John Ross Bowie and Zandi and maybe and you, and then maybe someone I'm forgetting, and then people who live like in the Bronx or, you know,
right. Which is cool.
In the boroughs. Like
you'll have Eddie Pepitone, who's bring Staten Island.
He's going to represent Staten. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
But no, it is.
I mean, it's a thing. Totally. I appreciate that.
It's totally a thing. It's totally a thing. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a younger brother who is a neurologist at Mass General and is like inventing a new MRI and like writes papers I can't even get through. And I'm like, oh, I just did a 2-drink minimum at the Giggle Patch or at, you know, the torture basement in Utah Lake.
I feel like that's a thing too. I feel like a lot of creative friends have siblings who, whether they're actually actively doing it or if it's just like a passive internalized thing that the creative person is doing, it's not uncommon. It's not hugely uncommon to have somebody who's, who's like, I mean, I write on a show. Sometimes people tell me that it inspired them. It got them through a hard time.
Oh,
that's almost like saving an actual life, one to one.
Someone was like, you know what? I really was able to look at my eating disorder after I saw your one woman show in The Fringe. I'm like, all right. I mean, I know I'm supposed to feel happy about that, but I'd rather just get in the New York Times. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I think it is true. I actually had my brother on one of my snack vlogs and people like, it's so weird. First of all, they were like, he's so hot. And I was like, ew, like, why are you talking about it? I was like, he has presence and he went to Harvard. Great.
Was he a cutie enough when you were, is he younger enough that you would never have had to listen to that until you guys were both adults and now you have to listen to people say he's hot?
I mean, I think it was, if you saw, he's like Jewish Pete Sampras. I mean, I don't think that'd be the first thing you say is like, oh, Ryan Adler's hot. Uh-huh. I mean, I just think
You don't know the vast majority of guys I dated in high school all sort of fit that description, so.
All right. I don't mean to be presumptuous. I mean, I just think it's infuriating because he's actually a really nice, humble guy. Like he's just, I don't know. He's 6 years younger. I think the main thing is that we definitely, when he learned he could like just smoke pot in his older girl's apartment on like Christopher Street, he'd bring his friends and I would flirt with his friends and we sort of bonded later in life. But which is not to say he's supportive. I had to just text him and be like, have you watched Bitter Homes yet? Just curious. And then he's like, well, you don't read my papers. And
my
I'm like,
papers.
Fuck you. I can't get
my
through
papers.
Like my medulla oblongata or the cerebellum or the TV. Like, shut up. And then he goes, yeah, I didn't care for some of them, but the second episode was really funny.
Okay. Well, listen,
whatever.
That's a whole rough family dynamic with a family that's be honest. No, I will be honest. Won't it be refreshing to know when I do like something? Because that's the gift I'm giving you by being brutal.
Yeah, maybe we don't have to be so honest.
Yeah. Okay, so you went to Spence. So that's, memory serves, that's an all-girls school, perhaps.
Yes.
I don't need to rehash all of this, but I feel like I went down a very... a delightful road with Santi about like my only understanding for the longest time or sense of like Upper East or Upper West Side. And I know that's a controversial statement, but I'm saying that as a Tucsonan, was like with Stillman movies. Like I was like, oh, okay. Now I understand, like I've seen Metropolitan. So now I understand how different my high school experience
you're not totally no I think that's a very astute I mean listen I think I just was like oh my god did, my boyfriend thought he was like Rick Von Sloniker in Metropolitan.
See?
I love that movie so much.
It's
no you're
so
right
good.
On target
okay
no,
good
it's god, so good great. If I could just spend the weekend watching Nicole Hall Center movies and Whit Stillman and just spooning Brownie Nut Blast I'd be quite happy
A 100%. And it says something that it's so specific, the specificity of his movies for someone like me who, again, can relate not at all on any kind of true experiential level to still just like treasure them as much as somebody like you who's like, let me tell you all the ways this rings true for me. That's like, nice job.
He captured. Yeah, we definitely have. It was a very sort of glittery, but also disgusting, the scintillating, precocious. I mean, I have this joke in my stand where I basically, if you grow up in New York, it feels like by the end of kindergarten, you're like an emotionally broken 45-year-old divorcee. Like, that's really what it is. And like, by the end of middle school, you're doing a poetry slam on the F
Yeah.
train called, like, I will cut you.
Well, it's so illuminating knowing that too, because, you know, how often do we see movies where there's a precocious child who has all these like wisecracks and these sort of like bitter, you know, Max, like in Rushmore kind of statements? And like, if you're not in the mood for that, or if it's not done well, the first thing that you're going to say is like, no child talks like that. But I'm not sure that's true. I feel like
yeah, I mean,
some New York City kids do talk like that.
Oh, yeah. And the behavior, like, I remember, like, I would sneak my boyfriend in after going to the Limelight or Nell's or the Saint or wherever the hell we went. And he would just, I would just sneak him into my bedroom and he'd spend the night. And my mom would be like, oh, Ted's here. You guys hung over. Do you want pancakes? And like,
yeah.
And it would be like, okay. I mean, this is, now it's getting weird, but yeah, it's sort of a blur. And then you just feel like you just become this jaded person. But college is easy, though. I felt like college was sort of an easy transition, though, I feel like, for Native New Yorkers. Just like, oh yeah, I we'll go to the Palladium and have Kir Royale, but then also like throw up on myself in a cab. Yeah, we've done that.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Look, it's a rough world out there, especially lately. I get it. So let's take care of our minds as best we can. I'm John Moe, host of Depression Mode with John Moe. Every week, I talk with comedians, actors, writers, musicians, doctors, therapists, and everyday folks about the obstacles that our world and our brains throw in front of us. Depression, anxiety, traumatic stress, all those mental health challenges that are way more common and more treatable than you might think.
The first time I went to therapy, I was so ashamed, and I was like, can't believe I gotta go into therapy. Like, I thought I could be a man, and Humphrey Bogart was never in therapy. And then my dad said, yeah, but he smoked a carton of cigarettes a day.
Give your mind a break, give yourself a break, and join me for Depression Mode with John Moe.
What was your experience at Spence in terms of like how you sort of fit into the like social infrastructure of your kind of year and your 4 years?
In terms of the friend wise?
Yeah. Like, and did you have an impression of yourself that you now look back on and go, well, that was what I thought I was projecting, but I think everyone would actually say I was this gal.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah, I am a Gemini, but I do feel I was bifurcated in this like very good girl, cross your T, dot your I's, just like, you know, I remember calling when I was getting into the cool group in seventh grade, because I was just, you know, like just this nice girl. I was a gymnast, and I would call my friend and her older sister got them, and I was like, may I please speak to Jocelyn, please? The older sister.
Please, may I please speak to Jocelyn, please?
I know. And I remember her older sister, I'll never forget. She's like, can you just say, give me Jock? Like, just say, give me Jock, you know, for Jocelyn. And I remember we like called her at Exeter on speaker later on, and be like, how do you give a blowjob? You know, like she was so scary. But I had that thing of just like, I love school, like I love Latin, I was happy to just do that. And then it took this turn when I took art class with the cool group, I think it was in eighth grade, and they're like, you should come out with us this Friday. And then that basically meant drinking tall boys at the Red Islands, like 89th and Madison, and my being like, I hate this, but let me become a full-fledged alcoholic in about 6 months, but I hate the taste. So then it was just, it was effortful. And then that became effortful, you know, because that was like where it all, I don't just, you know, like me, I have to really be funny and charming, and I hope the boys like me. And now it's like this, I'm in this different strata, like this different thing. And now we all want to go to Trinity and let's all apply together.
Yeah. Did you have friends? I mean, now I really am trying to turn this into a movie. I apologize. But did you have friends that you left behind, like you would see in a movie where like the girl who's still super into being a gymnast is like, hey, Fielding. Oh, no, that's fine. I didn't need to talk to you anyway. Just bye.
Oh, my God. That's such a great question. It's like, I feel so like, I feel, yeah, just Yes. Like my best friends were, you know, Eleanor and Melissa. I mean, Eleanor was sort of a floater and she just was her own person. But I remember Melissa was not going to be coming out and drinking. And I remember I was talking to the phone and my mom was like, Jocelyn's on the other phone. And I heard Melissa be like, she calls you. She calls you. And I was like, yeah. And I had started going out with them. And so, yeah, it's so weird. I just said to my daughter, because she was talking about best friends and she's in fourth grade. And I was like, yeah, like I miss Melissa. Like that just kind of ended, you know, in a way. I used to go to her country house. Now I'm sounding really Whitstable-y and like bougie and horrible, but like, you know, I went to her country house, would stop at the Red Rooster. And it was a lovely thing that we had. It just, you know, that got left behind.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't think it was my being mean. I don't know. I mean, maybe I just think we still hung out a bit.
Yeah.
Just the way it went.
That's such a I mean, yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
That's the sort of most heartbreaking. I mean, listen, it's not, again, like, why? Of course, this is why I have a podcast about teenage years, because I can't ever stop being interested in it. I've tried to stop being interested in other people's adolescence and in mine, and I can't do it. Clearly, I should have ended up being a child psychologist, but...
You're a Renaissance woman.
I'm a Renaissance woman.
There's nothing you can't do, Michelle.
Thank you. God, and you don't need a license, Janet. You don't need one.
No.
Not in the Renaissance.
You're saving lives. Just by breathing.
But like, yeah, I think just the natural, like the fucking Molotov cocktail of your hormones. Like this is a time when you are meant to be undergoing like werewolf-esque transformations emotionally, and everybody's going at their own pace, and some things that kind of crack open someone at one point in their life are never going to crack the other person open. Like I have friends who never needed to go through the goth phase. I needed to, like I needed it, you know, I needed it to understand like things about me that I had not been willing to look at, you know?
And thank God, you went after it. Like, thank God.
Yeah. But
it could have come out now, but yeah.
I mean, believe me, I really wanted to do a show that was just called Goth Mom. And then someone was like, I'm sorry, but Younger has already gotten there. And I had never seen that show. Actually, I still haven't, even though people say it's great. But I was like, but I'm talking about like, you know, a full regression. But but yeah, like just being in that place where, you know, again, it's and as you know, I'm not a parent, but just friends of mine who've had kids early enough that they have teenagers for kids, and the heartbreak that they're, not that it doesn't happen earlier, but just the intensity of teenage years when someone quote unquote leaves someone behind, or you know, one kid thinks that they've grown apart and the other one's like, I didn't grow apart. I've been right here. Like that
and it
all
stays
is
with
just
you. It gets imprinted.
Yes,
in
it's
you.
Just like
it's sort
guts
of indelibly etched.
Guts.
Because I do feel like we're all sort of still in the high school lunchroom in how we behave, that we've carried this sort of shellacked or these like constructs. It's been hard. You can't totally shake it. I mean, and it's so. And the truth is, Melissa. I mean, I felt like she's holding me back, or like, is she holding me back? Or like, we were probably growing apart. I mean, I just remember being at camp and my having my first kiss. And maybe it was in a letter. And she was like, whatever you do, like, don't let him finger you. Like, don't go to therapy. It's too much. Like, literally, she was very invested in this. I think we did. I'm not sure. Sorry, Jeremy Reifer, if you're listening to this with your retainer. But it's true. These like gradations where we're, when friends are like, you know, this fear-based thing of like, they're moving ahead, they're moving without me. Like, what does that mean for me? And then it just sort of dust settles where it's meant to settle.
And it's the same as, and it's like the picture of what that friendship looks like is so painfully similar to relationships and crushes in that way, because the more you try to stop that from happening, the more your behavior is dictating that absolutely will and must happen, because becoming the person that the other person is like, I don't want to be around. No, now you're clinging or, you know, like that happens just hard and fast in those years, I think.
And that self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. And then things come around, because in that, you know, with the cool group, they called us the Spencies. We went to Trinity, and I was not the mascot, but I mean, I would say we all have roles. I was not the leader. I'll say that. I developed very late. Like, I got my period at 14. Everybody knew, you know, I was just skinny gymnast. So that was fun.
Yeah.
But I remember Jocelyn sitting me down or living there, like, just so you know, and it was like really hard for them to tell me. And I remember being so panicked and petrified. Like, what are they going to tell me? They're like, well, some of the guys say that like, you're kind of a follower.
Wow.
Like, you just kind of like, and I remember it was, wow, I guess, slightly traumatizing because you're like, I mean, okay, that resonates. I'm not a leader.
Yeah.
That's certainly. So, but it was like,
but what does that mean that all the other girls were leaders? Like there were five leaders and one follower?
I think Jocelyn and Olivia, were the, because so much is like, they also had older sisters. And again, like,
they had that passport.
They had that passport and they just kind of carried themselves differently. You know, I feel like I was still pigtailed, skinny gymnast, you know. And then, of course, I rebelled because I think because I couldn't sort of like, oh, back to our point, callback, you know, taking care of myself on a web series. Uh-huh. It's like I couldn't take care of myself in the moment.
Yeah.
So it gets siphoned or like transmuted in these kind of like toretic, weird, rageful, slutty ways almost later on.
Yeah.
Because I can't process it normally.
Yeah.
Unquote.
Yeah. So, okay. So that fits into the chronology of like your first kiss. Like, where mm-hmm. does that fit in? Like, how old were you when you may or may not have been fingered?
Yes. I remember I went to a sleepaway camp in Maine and I think it was like, it's time. So I think it was the summer before, eighth grade, I think.
Yeah.
Was that? Yeah. Well, yeah. And it was, after a social with Jeremy Reifer. And it was, you know, I mean, I was completely out of my body and not like I really enjoyed anything, I feel like, for a while. But
yeah,
it was, I was glad it happened. Yeah, I think he felt me up in my under my Putumayo dress with my like budding nipples, which I was like, have fun, dude. This is no Anna Nicole Smith time, but see what you can find there. And I'll just hang out and think about my Charleston chews that I'm going to get from the canteen. But yeah, it was, I was so glad to just have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I definitely struggled with a lot. I mean, to be very honest, I struggled with some. I don't know. Is it self-hate or just profound insecurity? I mean, I certainly liked some aspects of myself, but I mean, really like violent, profound insecurity. So I think knowing someone found me attractive was nice.
Was that, I mean, again, I do know, I am not a therapist and I am proud to say I don't have a license, but I do a lot of great work for people. No, but you made the joke earlier about somebody saying like, oh, I saw your show that like helped me confront my eating disorder. Like, was that coming from a place of like, that actually happened because that is something you talked about in a one person show? Or is that just
I developed an eating disorder that was in college.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I come from just a whole family that's like crazy compulsive, just obsessed with food. Like my mom will eat lunch and be like, okay, are we having salmon for dinner? What can we just talk about dinner? Like while we're having lunch, like it's just a big, So yeah, that was senior year in college. I mean, I feel like a group of us were bulimics. It's sort of group bulimia. Like you're like, are you going to go throw up? Like,
yeah,
I'll go throw up.
Like, listen, that makes it a lot easier, I would imagine, in certain ways. Yeah. Because it's not.
It does. And then, but then it stayed I wasn't like the after school special where it was insane a couple of times, but it was definitely, I definitely struggled with that. And then, I put that in my show. Oh my God. Yeah. I just had PTSD from my enrollment show. Yeah. There was a toilet on the stage in my show called Hands and Me at the Fringe Festival and a bathtub too. Okay. And I was like, I'm here, Hollywood. I'm not going to get discovered from Hands and Me.
that's amazing. I have to say, there is, I mean, like, I want to roll my eyes, yet at the same time, I am also like, oh God, like, I wish I were the person that was like, I'm going to go ahead and need a real bathtub and a real toilet on stage. So that's my show. And for people like, interesting, I'm leaning in. Interesting. Tell me more. Like,
I need like a baby pool full of, you know, Evian water, but they'll think it's got vodka, you know, stolen Maya. And we'll light candles and I'll blow it out.
Yeah.
I'll sit in darkness.
You got, she got me. She pulled me in. She reeled me in, even though I didn't want to be.
Yeah, I think I do. I will say to my, I don't know that I demanded the toilet. I think my director found some on Ludlow Street or East North. They're like, let's have a disgusting toilet on stage. You know, I'm like, great, great. Yeah, that will really round it out. Because my parents have decided they've stopped paying for my, you know, indulgent solo shows.
the problem with being a great storyteller is that, and then having a life that is interesting and filmic enough on its own, is that it really does. I mean, this is all great stuff. Like, I would not have known what to do. Like, I never thought about really doing a one person show, or I never felt like, what would I? Like, there's not a, I don't, what would the beginning, middle, and end be? Like, how, where would I, what would I, that just wasn't something that I, as much as I liked acting and stuff, just even as a, you know, teenager in public school and stuff, I just would never have, but part of that, I think, for me was that same, like, oh, me? No, I don't, like, nothing about what I have to say is interesting enough for me to be, like, worthy of presenting a show. So just for me, I would be envious of a young person who was like, no, I have a one person show. Of course I do. Like,
you know, I think it was because I really found, I got sober at 24. So I think it was really about, I mean, I love performing. I've had a very kind of challenging relationship to performing. I actually feel like I only just came into my own like last year.
I get that.
Like, performing,
I get that.
And feeling in my body. But it was like, I got just nice feedback, or just, you know, they say go where it's warm, but it was always about my writing at first. It was like, so I think that's what I let carry me, was the story. And oh, and I even dated someone when I was in LA, because I brought that one woman show, like a iteration of it, to LA. And that's what sort of got me out here. And I remember I was dating someone. He's like, yeah, I think he skipped it the first time to see an Angels game. And I was like, okay, go fuck yourself. Uh-huh. And then when he saw it, he was like, yeah, he like took a deep breath. He's like, you know, I think your writing's stronger than your acting. And that was the guy. And it was like, you know, not, he wasn't totally wrong. Like, it was, you know, doing my best. But I think in terms of the solo show, it was like, I wanted to just tell the story, and I still was tentative and not totally in my body. But then I got there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you a kid who was interested in theater and stuff in high school?
No, not at all. Yeah, not at all. It was random class, second semester when I was at Penn. I just got into intro to acting. Of course, I had a big crush on my teacher, Ed Iser, and like steamed open his recommendation. And I was like, he said I had a cool resonant voice. He wants me. I'm like, stop it. Like, of course, it became like the one thing I'd be start like, you know, let's make it about an obsession feeling instead of like maybe something you do. That's great.
Right.
But yeah, that's when it started. When I was like, did Frankie and Johnny or Hooters or whatever scene I did. And then I was like, oh yeah, like I'm scared to death by this thing, acting, but I love it. Mm-hmm. And I just want to kind of go towards that, because I know my parents just want me to marry someone who works at Goldman Sachs and get facials and work at Planned Parenthood. And that's what that's all they really thought I could do.
Yeah.
So it was just been a very like Sisyphean adventure, like up pushing the boulder up the mountain.
Just going to ask you that. It sounds now like I'm like moving away from your truth and now going into like a thing that you specifically did not want to do, but like, I imagine you've seen White Lotus, and I'm curious like what your experience of watching that was, in particular the whole like, I thought extraordinarily well written, I mean it's Mike White, so of course, but the all the whole conversation about like, honey, you're not that great of a writer, if you want to do good in the world, marry someone rich. I mean, that's I mean, like that, you know, that's a series I've thought about many, many times since I watched it. And and that
me too.
That speech, I mean, that stuff in particular was like, oh, that is real sharp. Like that is very sharp. I mean, wasn't my experience. But even just being in a culture now where you're surrounded by people who are wealthy or who are married to wealthy people and do not work, but throw themselves with total gusto into all kinds of nonprofits. It's just such a fascinating landscape to me.
I agree. Yeah, I thought that was absolutely brilliant. I kept my marriage afloat. White Lotus. Like we're like, White Lotus, White Lotus. Like we get really excited. Yeah. It's really helpful for our marriage. But I think... Yeah, I mean, it was so brilliant and acerbic. I just loved every character. I thought it was interesting when people were like, oh, they were all so despicable. And I was like, oh my God, I just wanted to jump into bed with each of them. Like, I just loved, maybe not that husband. I mean, but what you're, to your point of like that thing with Molly Shannon and her, like, just do that. Like, I think I've done, to be honest, so much work around individuating, separating from those horrible kind of noxious signals of like, so it's like a snowflake that just does, it doesn't land on me. But what did pain me, I think, was that sort of a marriage of where you still feel like you might be muting yourself or it's holding you back somehow, or there's this, because I just feel like women sometimes just get the raw end of the deal in marriage. I just will say it. I don't even know if I believe in marriage. I'm still married for today. I love my husband, but it's just whatever. I'm like, you know, it's okay. But but that thing of like, I don't know, of just that's being, even if it's just like that invisible second seat, or just just letting a man kind of man's voice be a little bit louder or hold you back a little. So that's, I was like, ugh, with their marriage.
That marriage. Yes. I was like, wait, all of a sudden I had moved over to Connie Britton. I was like, no, hold on. I got lost. I lost myself.
Cause I love Connie Britton. Marriage. Sorry. I wish I could say their characters. Yeah. Like their,
no, I don't remember any of their characters' names. Yeah.
I'm talking about that thing when she's like, I want to write an article. And he's like, why? Which is not, I mean, my husband's actually great. I mean, I like rip him a new one every time I do stand up. So people are like, what are you talking about, Fielding? Like Larry's actually really couldn't be more supportive. Like you literally say the worst things about him at Flappers, like in the Yoohoo room. So like could not say a worse thing, but just the tenor or fabric of the, just the unspoken sometimes in a marriage. I don't know. I that kind of got me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, too, I think, I mean, I don't know what I, again, do not know, no license. I don't know. I have to have like a,
listen,
I should have like,
you are
like morning radio sound effects, but like mine are like, again, have no license. Like instead of like a sound, it would just be like,
you have more wisdom than like 90 of the therapists I've been to. I am the daughter of a therapist. I give you full, I beseech you to stop even saying I don't like you. You're magnificently equipped to say whatever you want.
This is very exciting. Well, thank you. And so now I can say with certainty, as I charge you $300, I mean, you're not just like, we'd all like, to, I mean, you're not just inside your own marriage, right? I mean, you're in your marriage, but you're also in every experience you've ever had in any other relationship to some degree.
Yes.
Or you're, you know, in your parents' relationship, or you're in the White Lotus's relationship, or you're in the place that you've seen women be in time and time again. I mean, it's hard to tease those things apart. And I know that that's true for me too. Like I will turn anger on Brandon that truly, truly is not about him.
Yeah.
It truly isn't. But in every other way, it would seem to be about him.
Oh, yeah.
Like I make these broad generalizations about what women go through, and like I absolutely cannot attach it to the person I'm yelling at. Like I'm like, but you don't know, because women da da da. And he's like, have I ever done that to you? I'm like, oh God, no. But anyway, and he's like, but what? So, but you are yelling at me though. You know that, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You and know I feel what I mean?
Completely
so
justified.
It's all there.
Completely justified. I'm like, I didn't get. I didn't get in a veil from a voiceover, and I'm like, Larry, you don't understand me, and you'll never understand who I really am, and this was never meant to be. And he's like, are you hungry? Like, did you?
Oh, that's always the best place to start.
I know.
Always the best place to start is, could you be hungry? Yeah. Even though the worst thing you can possibly say to a woman with low blood sugar is Are You Hungry? Because
worst and hormone.
That.
And he cannot bring up hormones, but he's still, my husband is, Larry's dying to make a period app for men. Like, just so there's a day when it's coming up for women. And I'm like, okay, that's misogynist and horrible. And, you know, we should have an unconscious uncoupling right now. But okay, yeah.
Well, I guess that takes us to, and then I do at the end of my episode play this game of MASH, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, and House that is purely childish and purely wish fulfillment, purely like just eating something rich and decadent at the end. But before I do, just to sort of put a little button on talking about Bitter Homes and Gardens in the context of everything else. And I also avoided asking this early on because I feel like this is the question that anyone who has to do press for something that is an echo of their personal, true personal life has to answer is, you know, at what point did you decide your relationship was in a place either of instability or stability that you could essentially roast it in the form of a web series? Like, I don't want to ask that question because I feel like that's got to be the question that you have had to deal with, but
I love it.
Okay, so that
I think we're just, honestly, we're so like self-obsessed, career obsessed, and like needy, desperate people that we were just like, well, like people are left, people were just kind of telling us to do it, to be honest with you. And it was, we were in a writer's group, so I think it was, which, yeah, I mean, we were, the first season, we were in a writer's group where the producer's like, we want to shoot this. I mean, probably, I think people, so I wouldn't, I think Larry and I mean, I can answer you to say, I think one answer would be I've stayed with my husband because I'm like, well, the web series, let's give it another year. Which is really one of the sadder statements you can say as a human being, to be like, I mean, I can't leave my husband. I mean, we have a semi-autobiographical web series and we got some really cool guest stars. So I really don't, he shouldn't get an apartment on Wilcox, because let's just stick to that right
now. Especially, for sure, especially because you've already talked about having a child. So
right, yeah. I mean, you know, we're stay. Although I have to say, you know, my parents have like a live-in divorce and I'm like, we stayed together for you. And I'm like, well, let's look at me, because I'm like, addicted snack blogger with like
The live in divorce is like, I feel like that is a thing that is sort of going extinct along with a lot of other.
I hope so, because that's why I'm always excited and elated if people really do decide to separate, because my parents are not happy and they're together. But anyway, but I think that, you know, your question, it was like, that's sort of the best, most fun part of our relationship is our creative. Like, you know, we weren't one of those couples that's like, oh, we just ripped each other's clothes off. Like, you know, it's good. Like, we're attracted to each other, but it was like our creative connection.
Yeah.
It's almost spiritual. Oh God, I want to shoot myself in the head right now. But it's, you know, it felt,
don't you dare.
It feels,
don't you dare.
It felt just easy and right and fun. And then we had that support in season one, we got lost in producer land, and then we just sort of took our power back and, you know, decided to do the pandemic season. And yeah, we'll see. So I think that we know we're sort of like desperate, needy, broken, insecure people in a somewhat functional relationship, but I know there are people who are like, oh, if we said one of the things that you say, like my partner would walk out the door. I think they would just walk out, never come back. So I don't know we know it's not healthy, and I don't know what's going to be unfolding for us. And I know that my husband's 10 years older. So I'm like, I really do want an open marriage, but just for me, like in a couple of years.
Oh,
and he's
man.
Like, okay, Fielding, that's quite enough.
I get it.
I'm like, all right, I'll just flirt with the neighbor. I hope I know. Yeah. Please feel free to ask me. I think that was a really long rambling answer, but you can, if there's something I can give you more clarity.
Well, I don't know that like asking, if you're asking a question like that, wanting like a cute bite-sized nugget, then I don't think you're really asking the question you're asking, because you've decided that's the one question to ask. So fuck those people. But okay, I'm gonna get into this MASH game.
Right.
But the only thing I will say, and this is now, this feels like it's more, for me, which is like stupid, but I don't know if you know like Christy Stratton Man and Gary Man, but they are, they had Christy cast me as her in a web series that was not, I would say, dissimilar, because the idea was more that like everyone else was crazy, but and there's so the sort of like gentle, mm-hmm. more gentle ribbing, parent to parent, husband to wife.
Mm-hmm.
But I just mm-hmm. it was really fun for me to watch your show because my experience. I mean, first of all, it's great, but second of all, the experience of like it was fun for me because in a way, I could imagine like. What if Fielding and Larry had been like, we're not going to play ourselves. We're going to cast people to do this.
Right.
And like, what a different shape that takes. And that's like, it's almost so different. It's almost incomparable, even though it's still a web series about two people who are married to each other and it's based on real life. But like the fact that you two are playing yourselves and are there present saying the words yourself is really, it's a totally different thing. And so that was something that really struck me when I was watching it. I was like, wow, this is like familiar yet totally alien to me because of my experience playing somebody who was, you know,
that's really cool to hear your experience. I really appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, I'll have to send you the link. I think you'll be like, oh my God, this is like if we... we're a little bit buzzed and we're in like the place where we're like, you're fucking idiot. I love you so much.
Oh, I would love
like,
to see it. Like, yeah, no,
yeah,
I'll send it to
you.
That's really cool. Cause yeah, we've certainly been like, well, what do you mean when we pitch to FX? We'll say, well, listen, if Kevin James and Sarah Silverman want to play us, great, go ahead. But it's like, we're like, you know what? No, for this, like we actually have to play ourselves. We know we're not for everybody.
I think so. I think it's, I love that. I love that decision. I think it's great.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
You're in the theater. The lights go down. You're about to get swept up by the characters and all their little details and interpersonal dramas. You look at them and think, that person is so obviously in love with their best friend. Wait, am I in love with my best friend? That character's mom is so overbearing. Why doesn't she stand up to her? Oh, good God, do I need to stand up to my own mother? We never know when we'll see ourselves in a movie, but that search for recognition is exactly what we're going to talk about on the podcast Feeling Seen with me, Jordan Cruciola. Each episode, we'll bring in a guest to talk about the films that they see themselves in and also the ways that movies have fallen short. So join me every Thursday for the Feeling Seen podcast here on Maximum Fun or wherever you find your podcasts.
By the way, this MASH thing, I, Janet, have not thought about this in like 30 years. And I remember we would draw diagrams with MASH. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, basically, I'm going to give you a series of categories mm-hmm. and I'm going to ask you to like off the cuff name three things per category that, you know, they'll be positive, like you want kind of things. And then at the end, I will ascertain which of those things you get for your 100% guaranteed MASH alternate universe existence.
Love it. So it.
So let's start with the first one. First one, let's do three movies, since we've talked a little bit about that, but three movies that you can jump into and just be in. You're in that world. You're not reliving the plot. You're not one of the characters. You're just there with the character, sort of experiencing that feeling that you get while watching the movie.
Friends with Money.
Oh, great.
I don't know why this is coming to me, but I want to say it. The Station Agent.
I love that you're going with this because I feel like, again, this is like a Rorschach situation where, sure, you might never say The Station Agent ever again in the conversation if someone asks you this question.
Right?
In 1 hour from now, you might not say it. But I love like the being in the moment of like, I don't know why I'm going to say this, but I would marry George Wendt. Like,
yes,
I love that.
Yes.
Okay. Station Agent, which by the way, I also love that movie.
Love,
so great
love.
One.
Little Jewel. And then this is just, I have to respect my instinct and The Ice Storm.
Oh my God. Woman, that is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Ugh.
Oh, God. In that kind of like, why am I doing this to myself? I can't stop watching this movie over and over again kind of way.
Yes.
It just hit me at the right age, at the right time.
Right.
Obviously, again, it's like something that there's something there. Like it was when I was reading all of Margaret Atwood's books where, you know, I don't know why I felt like I felt so seen by like northern climate, like waspy marital dysfunction. Like,
right.
Why as a 13-year-old was I like, you get me?
Right. Right.
But yeah, it's
interesting.
Fantastic.
You're like Joan Didion.
Oh, I mean, just serious spoiler, but like when little Elijah Wood sits down and you realize what's happened to him. So if you haven't seen this movie,
right.
I stood up out of my chair and like almost threw up.
I'm
like, it was
exactly
so
the same.
Real
I had
to
exactly
me.
The same.
Right?
Exactly. Like, I was just rocked. Like, just
I mean,
irrevocably
and a movie that has the power to do that with you, for you, that's not like a fantasy or sci-fi or something extraordinary, something that has the power to just do that to you, and it's like not a movie about much, is
right.
I think phenomenal
it's extraordinary.
Achievement.
Yeah.
Ugh. And that it was Ang Lee. Like, and that it was like, ugh. Oh, by the way, I don't know American culture very well.
Right. And it was just amazing. You know, I don't know. I just play sometimes, you know, we get insulted by movies. They're just holding our hand too much or overexplaining.
Yeah.
And it was like just so, it's just exquisite, his directing.
Highly so recommend. Exquisite. Oh my God. A movie. So I think I'm going to cheat this game so that you end up with that movie. Okay. all right. Next category, let's do three places in the world that you would love to have a second home. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean vacation home. It can mean like busy city, a second home, that we're going to pretend like we can sort of teleport you to. Yep. So you don't have to worry about the travel, taking that into
consideration. Is it bad that I literally thought you were going to say second marriage?
Don't worry. That category is inherent to MASH.
Okay, perfect.
It's coming,
perfect.
Baby.
Okay, awesome.
It's
awesome.
Coming.
Awesome. Yeah, I don't want to like, you know, just lead the witness or whatever it's called. Okay. I'm going to say Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, it's a town in the south of France. I'm going to say,
great.
I don't know why. I've never even been there, but I'm going to say Vancouver because it keeps coming up a lot. It just seems interesting.
I love it.
And
I approve.
And I'm going to say Booth Bay Harbor in Maine.
Okay, great. I've never been to Maine and it troubles me.
Yeah, let it trouble you and change that right away for next summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Next category. Well, listen, I'll get into it. I don't mind giving you customer satisfaction. This one is alternate universe romances. And I don't need to stick you with a marriage. Like, if you want to say, like, you know, I want to have sex with this one character from this one movie, but do not stick me with them for the rest of my alternate universe life. I'm not going to do that. Like, you can have, I like to call it the romance and sexy times category. So
just in a character.
I mean, no, it could be anyone. It could be a living person. It could be Jimmy Stewart circa blah, blah, blah era of his life. It could be a cartoon, you know, it could be, I can't tell you how many people have chosen Robin Hood, the cartoon fox, that he like really awoke a lot of feelings for a lot of women. It turned out that I did not know about until I started doing this podcast.
Okay. Okay. No, I love it. Okay. Okay, cool.
It's wide open.
I mean, I'm great. I'm going to say, geez, you'll really get to know me. Sad. I think I need to go back into therapy. I'm going to say Ray Liotta and Goodfellas.
Whoa.
I'm going to say Catherine Zeta-Jones in Traffic.
Wonderful.
So I'm going to say, and then this might be more like, I don't know if it's romantic. So, but you're angling for romantic. Okay, so I'm gonna respect that.
Well, no, I mean, what are you saying? Like
friendship,
companionship?
Like a friendship companionship.
Oh no, that's another category. Don't worry.
Okay.
This is like peeking into the each future category.
This is romance. Okay,
before
stick with romance.
I can get
okay,
them.
I have more. I have more. Okay, I'm not gonna say my crush because I just can't do that right now. But I'm gonna say, did I say Clive Owen? Clive Owen.
No.
Clive
but
Owen.
Listen, I'm happy to put him down.
Let's put Clive Owen, especially in Inside Man.
Oh, that movie's so good.
Ugh, so good.
Yeah, he was one where, I'm sure I've said this on the podcast before, but he was one where like I had never seen him. I don't know what broke him. It certainly wasn't Inside Man. He was like already famous
right,
by Inside
right.
Man. But I can't remember what movie it was that kind of he broke and became really famous. But he had become famous enough that I would see him on the cover of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't get it. and then I had to see him in something. I mean, he's really a good example of like, you need to see the moving, breathing, talking, thinking, smoldering version of him to get it. Whereas like you can look at a picture of Brad Pitt on the cover of a magazine and go like, I don't need any more information. I understand why women think he's a heartthrob.
Right. But
Clive,
the word smoldering.
No, it's more complicated with Clive.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. He's complicated. Yeah.
Somehow you are leading the witness, because this next category is friends, friendships. Pull a character out of a book, pull a character, pull a past president's wife, pull whatever you want. Ooh. To sort of be your buddy in this reality.
I love it. Okay. I'm going to say Nadia Comaneci.
Okay.
Oh my God. Sorry. Nicole Holofcener. Just a circle back to her, you know.
Oh my God, no kidding.
And I'm gonna say Michelle Obama.
Okay, fantastic. All right, next category is let's do three foods that in this reality, it's either maybe you feel ecologically guilty about it, or you are allergic to something, or it's something you used to be able to eat a sleeve of Oreos and now you can't, but you wish that you could without feeling sick, just to get that same rush of being a kid. It could also be something where you had this beautiful croissant one time in the south of France and you're like, nothing has ever tasted as good since.
Oh my God.
You're going to get three things, snap of your finger, you can have it in perpetuity with zero ramifications.
Just wondering how much time do we have left? Because I can have about maybe 100, that's me. Okay, love this. I'm going to say tiramisu soaked in alcohol would be like literally dripping.
Right.
My friend's mom's homemade mac and cheese with the rigatoni should you, or the big pasta. Okay, anyway,
the big thick tubes.
Yeah, like the
not penne, but is something
right,
bigger.
Right, exactly. Whatever the
is
hell
that
rigatoni? What is it?
I suddenly realize I don't know.
I feel like it's not rigatoni, but it's those.
I think you're right.
All right, if you're listening.
Yeah.
That's what we mean.
Oh, this is never going live. I'm sorry. This is actually never going live.
I know. I just love doing that. And then there was this dessert we had in Saint-Tropez, my husband and I, where they brought it out in a pot and they were like, comme ça, comme ça. Uh-huh. And you got to just, and it was some kind of creme caramel involvement that was wonderful. Just like, oh, I've lived. And that's all I need now. Now I can be
gorgeous.
In the episode of Jeremy Renner can blow me up right now in the Hurt Locker because this is fucking amazing.
Gorgeous.
I guess creme
fantastic. Fantastic. Creme caramel. It's amazing. All right, great. I got lost. I got lost.
Impress everyone. Yeah.
Exactly. Also that. Next one. Let's do three skills that in this reality, they're practical skills, which isn't to say that it can't be like sculpting marble. I mean that in it's not a superhero power kind of a thing. But so three real life skills, or, you know, you can be a genius at something that you would like to be able to sort of wake up with tomorrow and have kind of downloaded Matrix style.
I love it. Okay. I would love to be able to change a tire.
Yeah.
I'd love to be able to skateboard. I would love to be able to speak in a crazily psychotic, simple, clear way without explaining.
I understand. I understand. I can't tell you how many, I can tell you, it's not that many. It is two, though. And I would say that is at least one too many audiobooks about why psychopaths are fascinating and what's to be envied. Because the idea of listen, I don't want any of the rage and I don't really want the level of self-obsession.
Sure.
But the idea of just saying something to someone and not giving one shit how it makes them feel.
Oh,
is
my
like,
God. Nirvana.
That is dangerously Nirvana. Attractive.
Isn't it?
And it's a safe attraction because I know I'll never be that. And so it becomes that sort of that person murdered someone in this movie. I don't want to do it, but I really wish I could do
it. But I want those other constellation of character traits where you just don't give a fuck.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Maybe one day a month we can just somehow do that.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting exercise. It's
Isn't
an interesting
it?
Exercise to, at some point when something's making you feel totally shitty, to sort of go, if I were a psychopath, I would not care about this at all right now. And let me just try that on. It's up to me. I decide whether I'm going to feel this way.
It's
also
an acting exercise. We had an acting teacher once 100%. Who was like, when you go to an audition, just put a pretend Gatling gun in your pocket. Just a knife in your pocket. Just like it's pretend. Like, we could just pretend. Just,
like, other people say envision people naked, but this person said envision being able to inflict violence.
And yeah. I prefer that. That's right. That's right. So, all right. Maybe we'll be action buddies similar. On this. We'll be action partners
yeah,
on this.
Great. Yeah, great. I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay. All right. Next category. I don't trot this out very often because it is a bit more challenging, but three concepts that you get to take credit for. It could be two cars get to turn on left, even though no one's had that real conversation. It could be the concept of the White Album. It could be the concept of ketchup. It could be the concept of the Getty Building, like the Getty Museum. Like, it could be basically anything that you're like, I want to have created that thing, even if it's more like,
oh, that's,
you know,
cool,
sort of esoteric than yeah. than actually you carved David or whatever.
I love it. All right, cool.
But it can be that too.
I want to take credit for a new kind of Duncan Hines icing that just doesn't make
Ooh.
You fat.
Yeah.
It's actually really healthy. It makes you healthier.
Oh, you know? Fabulous.
Yeah. I want to create an easy fucking hair mask that actually works and takes 2 minutes to apply. For silky.
I don't think I've ever even tried because I
oh, yeah.
just don't
you can't
even
try.
Know.
And my hair's like a hay rat's nest, like the newer pump. Okay. And I want to invent jeans that magically just go to your height that you never have to alter.
Great. Great, great, great. Great.
Saying that if okay, someone perfect. Is 5'2", that is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Yeah.
Listen, I hear you.
Yeah.
On the opposite side. I mean, I'm 5'10", so it's not like...
Whoa, how fun.
Well, yes and no. Okay. Right. Anyway, so opposite, final yeah. category, mm-hmm. pour vous, final mm-hmm. category for you will be, let's say, three creative, like, maybe it's a show that no longer exists that you're like, ugh, honestly, if I could go back and write on Laverne and Shirley, I would. Like, sort of a creative thing mm-hmm. that is sort of out of reach because it's in the past that mm-hmm. we're going to give you the power to magically still be a part of.
I love it. My So-Called Life.
Oh, great.
Freaks and Geeks.
Yep.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to really apologize for saying this because I really have no business, but I'm going to say Sanford and Sons. So maybe I'm just a resident white person. So I'm really sorry, everybody, but I really love that
show.
No,
you're the white consultant.
I'm a white consultant. I'm just the white Jewish consultant. I'm not pretending to be anything I'm not, so apologies.
Maybe
I just bring snacks.
Candor.
You know what? I can even just bring snacks yeah. to people in the writer's room. I'm fine with
there
that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome. Okay. Give me a number between 1 and 7.
7.
I would love for you to just do a slight vamp. I mean, it's not necessary because Julian can edit out the mm-hmm. what would otherwise be an awkward gap of silence while I have to do this and give it total concentration.
Okay, sorry.
But
came in
it's
like
also
a SEAL Team 6. Sorry about that.
However, it's also a great opportunity for a built-in plug where you can refresh the listener on things that you would like them to check out of yours, not the least of which, of course, being your web series. So if you don't
cool.
mind,
absolutely.
I will do my business and you can just give those things a last shout out.
Love it. Thank you. So guess what, everyone? You can binge all of season 2, Bitter Homes and Gardens, on YouTube. So just go to YouTube, type in Bitter Homes and Gardens, not Better Homes and Gardens, but Bitter Homes and Gardens. And we have, they're about 8 minutes each. And I've heard it's a nice amuse-bouche where you could just watch it over lunch. And by the way, we will make you feel better about your own relationship because my husband and I have maybe the worst marriage. I mean, it's, you know, it's not good. It's not good. It's exhausting. It's fun. It's exhausting and depleting and that we fuck once every 2 bishvat. But please find us. And guess what? It's not just about us. If you're like, oh, why do I have to watch the little circle jerk between Fielding and Larry? We have, we were graced with the amazing talents of Billy Gardell, David Koechner, Ahmed Barucha, Madison Shepherd, and Eric Edelstein, and just like a panoply of amazing guest stars who just take over. They should have their own show, but enjoy Bitter Homes and Gardens season 2 on YouTube. Let me know.
Fantastic.
Let me know how you feel. We'll send you a bitter hoodie. We're having them made by little, yeah, leprechauns.
Fantastic.
Right now.
Yeah. David Koechner played my husband on Dana Gould's show Stand Against Evil for IFC. It was a horror comedy, and he got to turn into essentially Mothra. And it was a joy to behold because he definitely went through a pupa stage.
Ooh.
And it was all practical effects. So he's like covered in slime.
Oh my gosh.
I love Kechner. Yeah. I love Kechner. He's a great cast.
I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's absurd. But
I love things like that. That's so cool.
I think, you know, you have a wonderful cast, but that's only a reflection of, you know, people wanting to be a part of the
show. Thank you.
So,
well, my husband takes full credit. He's like, I brought all the guest stars,
great.
Just so you know. I work with them.
Oh,
you did nothing.
Okay,
get
cool.
it. I'm like, okay, Larry,
all right.
Go microdose Cracklin O'Brien because I can't do
it. I did used to eat Cracklin O'Brien.
Yes!
Yvonne lost a memory for me.
It's delicious.
I loved it.
I mean, I could have put that in the food or one of the categories, but yeah.
Yeah. Cracklin Oats. Cracklin Oat Beef.
He does the trick.
Okay, I'm feeling real good about this. I think you are going to be pleased with this bevy of awards that are just going to be showered on you in this MASH life. First, I want to congratulate. I don't really even know where to start, but I guess I'm going to start with the fact that you have a beautiful. Now, listen, you know, mansion, apartment, shack house. I have no control over that. So you did get an apartment. It is in Boothe Bay Harbor, Maine. Congrats on that.
Thank you. What a dream.
I don't know if that was something you bought with your Duncan Hines guilt-free icing money.
Oh my gosh.
But
dream come true.
You will make a fortune. So that's not surprising at all. And that was something, I think you had the idea for that while you were writing on Freaks and Geeks. I can't remember, but that was like, it started as a joke and then it turned into, you know, you worked on this beloved show, but then this thing that started as a joke turned into this like amazing cash cow of the Duncan Hines.
Cash cow. Oh my gosh. Brilliant.
Definitely also can have unlimited your friend's mac and cheese with the giant rings that neither one of us can remember what they're called. Let's just call them tunnels.
Yeah,
mac
exactly.
and cheese tunnels.
Yeah, big straight fusillis.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like I'm so remiss in not knowing my pasta names right now. You also can jump into the fine film Friends with Money. Well done there. That is a movie that might it would be interesting to drop you into that movie with your sterling, simple, to the point, clear communication. I'd love to see how that creates an upset in that movie.
This
would be fabulous.
I think
And I think, you know, there are two people in your life who are really going to appreciate that for maybe different reasons. But I know how much your dear friend Michelle Obama appreciates it. she finds it very refreshing in this world of ours. And then I think also, you know, it's however it is that Catherine Zeta-Jones's character in Traffic, she needs to be told it like it is. Okay. You need to be the tough truth teller. In that relationship. So it makes sense in that regard as well.
Never stop.
I mean, I have to stop because we've run out of categories, but I want you to know that this is a very, very satisfying MASH for me as well. I think it's one of my recent faves. So well played.
Thank you. And the way you narrate with your silky, just intoxicated voice, oh my God, that brilliant. Like I really was trying to, because I did catch myself being like, what would sound cool, but like, no, this, we have an intimate connecting vibe. And I was like,
that
was my truth. And that was fantastic.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Cause you're not going to feel satisfied if you put answers you don't
know.
This was so fun. Oh my God. I really do feel like I just had like therapy with a friend for an hour in the afternoon.
Like we just went to Intelligentsia, but slash therapy slash blast off, rounding up blast. Yeah. I mean, you are the Renaissance woman. You are a therapist. You can do it all. This was beyond a blast. Thank you.
The show is produced by Julian Burrell and Christian Duenas.
And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers.
by my side. I will make you dinner in the afterlife. Live in our afterworld. Drinking jewelry of gold and pearl. Sometimes don't break. I come to nourish you with my hands, make you sculpture in the sand. Hands of work, hands that tie. We form the shape, but the shape as you're by my side. Will you make me laugh in the afterlife? Long as I'm on the dark night, you can lead me on to the morning
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.